You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to the show. This is Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil, and we are breaking down the Miami Heat's fifth straight loss, this one against the Spurs, the Heat losing 94-90. Yeah, five straight losses. Much of the same, right, David?
Yeah, we've talked about, Miami has the grittiness, the defensive intensity to stay in there at times, but there were problems offensively that manifested themselves and defensively that manifested throughout different points of the game. Miami looked overwhelmed early and then was able to mount a comeback, and then they let San Antonio continue to build on their lead, and they came back, cut the lead. I want to say they cut it down to as close as four late in the second half. And then from that point, then San Antonio just did enough to keep Miami at bay. Despite some hot shooting from Dion Waiters late in the game, he led all Heat scores with 27 points, or all scores, period. Yeah, he led all scores with 27 points.
They had it within like 7 or 8 points, really. I mean, the final score, they lost by 4 points, but that, like, Waiters hit a three-pointer, like, garbage three-pointer late. It was really like a 7-8 point game for a lot of that. At one point, it was within 8 points with, like, more than enough time left, like 4.5 minutes left, and Kawhi Leonard came in and hit five straight points, extended the lead to 13 at that point. And at that, you know, it was over. It was over right then and there, because the Heat just don't have the offense to really come back from 13 points down. When San Antonio, I thought they took their foot off the gas a little bit in the fourth quarter. Aldridge and Kawhi rested for quite a while between the end of the third and the beginning of the fourth quarter when they eventually came back in. And I know that Pop likes to rest his starters, but I don't know. I thought I kind of got that sense from San Antonio that they kind of took their lead for granted a little bit. Miami made their run, as teams do, and San Antonio, when they had to, they just put Kawhi back in, five straight points, boom, game over, really. And so I think you're right. Yeah, it was a good performance. This team is always going to play hard. It could have easily have folded under the, okay, these are the Spurs, this is a Western Conference contender, we are the lowly Miami Heat who have lost four straight, we have no shot in this game. But to their credit, they kept fighting. They kept trying to win that game regardless of the Spurs taking their foot off the gas or not, and they only lost by 4 points, and that's now two times that the Heat have lost to the Spurs, and both times they were very competitive in the game, and both times it really came down to just not having a closer, even though Dion Waiters tried to be that.
It was an interesting lineup all night for Miami. Spoelstra definitely was a little off the wall in his overall rotations. Second straight game without Goran Dragic, obviously, who's still nursing a sore sprained ankle. So the starting lineup changed yet again. This time the backcourt had Dion Waiters and Josh Richardson, but he also started Derek Williams at power forward, just as you and I had talked about in Monday's podcast. We suggested that Derek Williams was getting some more playing time, that the Luke Babbitt experiment wasn't, you know, working nearly as well as we had anticipated, or as Spoelstra had wanted it to work out. And Derek Williams got the starting nod. He only played 16 total minutes, but he still was the starter there. And, of course, Whiteside started alongside Justice Winslow, as has been the case throughout the season. But we also saw some playing time in there from Josh McRoberts, who got a couple minutes here and there. I think he had an overall solid impact. James Johnson, of course, played.
McRoberts, despite going 0 for 6, you know, I thought he came in. He dished out three assists, grabbed three rebounds. He's a good rebounder or a solid rebounder. He can play center well enough that he kind of holds it down. The way that he gets players involved and the ball just moves when he's in the lineup is valuable.
He had a great behind the back pass to Rodney McGruder, who cut through the lane for a layup. When Miami was making their run in the second quarter.
It's just that the shooting, man, it's just like, and it's not like he's missing hard shots. Like, teams, players, they leave him open. Like, the Spurs just left him open on every shot. No shot he took was contested, really. There was this one shot that Tyler Johnson and him ran this nice little two-man game where Tyler Johnson got McRoberts the ball on the roll, and McRoberts just missed a bunny at the rim again, and it's just like, dude, you got to hit these, man. And it's so frustrating. McRoberts has never been an amazing shooter, or not even necessarily like a good shooter, but he's always been like average, and now he's just below average. I mean, he's Justice Winslow levels of bad at shooting. And I don't know what happened when he came to South Florida. I don't know if it's his legs that act up and he just can't get his strength under him and he can't get any lift. It certainly looks like he doesn't get a lot of lift on a shot.
No, definitely not. I mean, I think he took one three-pointer that looked like it was a straight line drive shot, had no chance of going in.
And another layup that he just barely got off the floor, you know, and he was trying to get up and rise up. And he just, so I understand that that's an issue, but 0 for 6, Jesus.
I mean, it's bad. I mean, hopefully you can... think about it. What's this like in the 3 years that he's been here now? This is his third season with Miami. What is this? Like, his 20-something appearance in total?
Probably, yeah, something like that.
I mean, he's only played a handful, a number in the teens in his first season. He hardly played at all last year. I mean, it just seems like he hasn't really played all that much. So there's a substantial amount of rust there. And for a guy, like you said, who was never a particularly good shooter – you know, for him to get to any kind of comfort level, and you have 60, to assume that
60 games in 3 years.
Okay, so a little bit more than I thought. Still, it's not a whole heck of a lot.
Like an average of 20 appearances a season, which is not a lot at all.
You know, he needs to get into a much more comfortable level offensively. But there were things that he did well. He dove to the floor. Yeah. You know, he played some decent defense, I think. You know, he harassed their bigs and things of that sort.
But he's going to get a shot, right? Like, he's going to get that opportunity. They didn't play Willie Reed in tonight's game at all. McRoberts was the first center off the bench, and he has been for the last couple of games. He has his opportunity, so he's going to have it. I don't know how much longer it will be there for. I think he's played as well, if not a little bit better than Willie Reed. He at least brings a little bit of a small ball presence to their reserve unit, and I think the McRoberts James Johnson front court in that backup rotation works well together. I think there's something there that works.
I agree.
Where that Willie Reed James Johnson thing wasn't working because you have two non-shooters starting in your front court, and that was my issue with Willie Reed in general. Is if he's your backup center, you got to make sure that you take a floor spacer and pair him along with him because he's extremely limited outside of the restricted area. And to me, this McRoberts James Johnson thing works a little bit better. I don't know if at some point you start pairing Willie Reed and Luke Babbitt in that second unit together or something like that. But
I also like McRoberts, like you mentioned, he also brought in a spark of energy there. One that I thought personally was missing with Hassan Whiteside out there. Like, there was just something about Whiteside, again, despite the high level of production, the big rebound numbers, the efficiency scoring at the rim and all those things. There are just too many moments there where he's disengaged, not following up on rebounds and shots and things of that sort. And that wasn't the case when he was off the floor. I think that's when Miami had their best runs overall, because it just seemed like the players that were out on the floor with Whiteside sitting on the bench were, you know, a little smaller, a little bit more evenly distributed as far as their skill sets are concerned, but they brought a better energy level. And they had Roddy McGruder out there at some point.
Yeah, for a large portion of that fourth quarter run, Whiteside was on the bench.
Yeah, and I think it worked. I mean, that's when Miami started making their comeback and things of that sort. And then they brought him in late, and it worked, and then all of a sudden it didn't. And, you know, I don't know. I'm starting to get a little frustrated with Whiteside. I talked about it in yesterday's podcast.
Yeah, I don't want to rush into that, though, because we're going to talk about him in the spotlight. So,
okay.
But him and Waiters were the two leading scorers. Whiteside at 23 points, Deion Waiters at 27 points on 26 shots. We're going to talk about both of them in the spotlight a little bit later in this show. I do want to take a moment just to kind of talk about the Spurs a little bit, because we've seen him twice, right?
Mm-hmm. And thank God we don't have to see him again.
Right? Jesus. So, but Kawhi Leonard, again, just not efficient shooting from the floor, but so impactful. 24 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, hit 3 of 5 3-pointers, which really, and those 3-pointers, you know, Kawhi's not like a volume three-point shooter, even though these numbers might say otherwise. I mean, he took five of them for a Spurs team that doesn't take a lot of... I mean, he took five of San Antonio's 15 three-pointers. So... But he has a knack for hitting three-pointers, I think, in moments where it really hurts the team, or almost like big shot Bosch type three-pointers, right? It's just like when you need to just that little extra oomph in a run or something just to kill the opponent's run, that's when he does it. And and Kawhi has been fantastic. LaMarcus Aldridge made his first six or seven shots before he finally missed one. I mean, he dominated the first half. They got good minutes from Pau Gasol. Tony Parker was... he had a couple moments there, ended up with 11 points. I mean, just in general, the Spurs team, I don't know, man. What do you think about, do you think they're really contenders in the Western Conference?
They don't seem ever, like, from the two times that we've seen them, I haven't noticed them look particularly dominant in any one particular stretch.
Yeah.
And I think you can't ever discount a team that has such a great player in Leonard, has some good veteran presence there, and of course has Popovich leading the way. They just, to me, they just don't seem to be the same kind of efficient unit we've seen from them over the last few seasons. So I wouldn't put them in the upper echelon along with, say, the Clippers and Warriors, obviously. So,
but Kawhi is incredible.
He is. He is.
I'm wondering if he's... I think he should be a top three, top five MVP candidate this season.
Yeah, I think that seems legitimate. Again, if for nothing else...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I mean, the overall impact on defense and, of course, his ability on offense. I mean, you know, a lot of people use the ridiculous rationale that he's a quote-unquote system player, whatever that might mean, but I think we're starting to see that even when the system changes this year, as it has in the past, from the when it was in the past, he's still being very, very efficient.
Some wonderful writing out there right now about this offense just being built around Kawhi Leonard. I mean, this is Greg Popovich, you know, who's known for the Spurs, who are known for ball movement and stuff like that, and he's calling just straight-up isolations for Kawhi at this point. Right. But the more I'm watching him, and not to – I don't want to bring our listeners down any more than maybe they already are after five straight losses, but the more, after watching Kawhi in these two games, and just in general when they're not even playing the Heat let me backtrack for a second. There was this play when Justice Winslow was going up for a putback dunk.
Yeah.
I think it was the fourth quarter. And he just couldn't do it, you know? And it's not, I don't know if, Winslow's very athletic, but I don't know if he's that athletic. And I think Kawhi Leonard is way more athletic than people give him credit for. Kawhi is a guy that can go up and get a putback dunk. Kawhi is super athletic. And I don't know that Justice Winslow, who is compared to Kawhi Leonard and who's like, best case scenario is Kawhi Leonard. I don't think he's that athletic. And
not like that, no. He's not at the same level as Leonard, for sure.
And so, again, not to bring down any of the listeners that are already brought down a little bit, but we really need to start tempering these expectations about Winslow being Kawhi Leonard or even these comparisons. It's really like, man, I don't... like Kawhi is, like, to me, you know, he's a rare dude. Like, he's got rare athleticism. I mean, the knock against Kawhi coming out was that he just couldn't shoot, and he fixed that. And that's why he fell all the way to 13. Winslow's had a couple other issues. Obviously, he can't shoot, you know, but he was supposed to be selected in the top five. He slid all the way down to 10 for still nobody really knows why. But I don't know, man. I think that these comparisons really need to stop. I don't know. I don't think he'll ever beat Kawhi Leonard. I know I'm not – outside of Heat, you know, outside of South Florida, that's not – necessarily a controversial thing to say. I think most people are like, oh yeah, duh, like there's very few Kawhi Leonards, but I think a lot of Heat fans still look at Kawhi and they're like, Winslow could be that, and I just want to say, like, probably not. Which is okay. Yeah, I always said, if he could be 50% of Kawhi Leonard, you got a all-star. You know, if you could be 70%, you have a franchise-type player. Kawhi Leonard is really good.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100% there.
All right. Let's get on to our, what's next? The power forward belt?
Might as well do.
I think we lost all our sponsorships. I think we lost them all. I don't think anybody wants to sponsor the power forward belt.
Well, I mean, look, you know, Derek Williams, now that he's starting, there's some exciting opportunities there. I mean, we could look at, you know, I'm drawing a blank now. What's the name of his retail store outside of in Arizona?
Whose?
Derek Williams?
Oh,
he owns like a store, like 7,000 or something like that.
Yeah, it's a men's apparel,
I believe. Yes, and I think he's co-owner, or just he might be the owner, but he doesn't actually have much as far as the hands-on running of the shop. I think, you know, now that he's playing a little bit more, I think there's some legitimate sponsorship opportunities there.
Well,
so
we should
Derek,
start handing this belt to him. Too bad he didn't get it this week.
Well,
he didn't.
I mean,
he didn't do enough to take it away from James Johnson. That was really. Look, their stat lines, neither of them came off the page, but it was a situation where, you know, we looked at the stats and we said nobody did it enough to take it away from James Johnson, so he still gets it. But he did start his first game, right? He started three straight quarters now, or three straight halves. That's something.
It is something. It is something. Look, we saw positive from him. He ran the floor well. You know, his ball handling's not too bad. His shooting is still obviously, like everybody else on the team, apparently a major weakness. There are going to be some nights there where his shot's falling a little bit better than tonight. So that's something to look forward to if he continues to get some consistent playing time. And I just think he brings an added dynamic there that Luke Babbitt simply isn't capable of at this point. He's still probably a little bit below what James Johnson has shown on occasion this season in Miami. But I think as a starter, I think Derek Williams is probably, as we talked about, you know, on Monday's podcast, he's probably a better option to start because he can do a little bit more than what Babbitt can. And, you know, as long as Babbitt's shot isn't falling, Babbitt did play. He played 8 minutes, didn't take a single shot, didn't do anything other than pick up a foul. So I think that's something that we might be seeing a trend beginning as far as Babbitt's limited playing time moving forward. You know, obviously McRoberts is going to continue to play even though he went in at center. But I did, you know, if James Johnson is the winner again of the power forward belt, I do have a question as far as, you know, the defensive assignments there. We saw Whiteside switch onto LaMarcus Aldridge and either Derek Williams or McRoberts guarding I think Pau Gasol at center. That seemed like, Babbitt, when Babbitt came in, he was guarding Gasol at center, and we saw Whiteside switch up to Aldridge.
Yeah.
That seems bizarre, right? Was that a mistake? Or, I mean, obviously it wasn't. It was something by design because it kept happening, but at the same time, it didn't work.
Babbitt was out of
position every time.
I don't know if they were concerned with, I don't know if they were concerned with Aldridge kind of getting to if they wanted to basically limit Aldridge to the mid-range. I don't know. Like, it was weird because you remember in that first matchup, like, Pau Gasol roasted Whiteside. They probably just thought that Whiteside doesn't have the dexterity to stay with Pau Gasol's post moves, and maybe he was just better off just trying to put an arm in front of between LaMarcus Aldridge and the rim, so to speak. Maybe that's what it was.
Didn't work.
No, it didn't work. And it didn't. Basically, whoever wins or Whiteside guarded in the first two matchups, in the first game against Pau, when Pau had a great game, and this game against Aldridge, whoever Whiteside was guarding had a good game. That's not a good sign.
No, it's not. His on-ball defense continues to be a problem.
But the power forward belt is with James Johnson, basically out of default. Right. I mean,
let's hear a serious question then. If Derek Williams decides to sponsor the Power Four belt, does that weigh any kind of, you know, does that add any kind of consideration as to who gets the belt assigned to them?
If Derek Williams sponsors the Power Four belt, he gets it every week until the sponsorship drops. I think we would proudly sell
ourselves
activities. Yeah, ourselves. We'll pimp the Power Four belt out gladly for the sponsorship from the apparel company based in Arizona. I think that will resonate hugely with Miami Heat listeners.
I agree. I just want to put that out there that we can't be easily bought.
We can be. It just takes money.
Absolutely.
Or like free pizza or something. Like, we'll even take that.
Free pizza. Send
a six-pack of beer a week and we'll be good.
All right.
Craft only, none of that garbage.
Store bought stuff, no.
Yeah. Unless Bud Light wants to sponsor us, we'll take them too.
We'll take anything. Let's be honest, we'll take any kind of sponsorship opportunities there. But no, this is a serious thing, though. You know, for all of our listeners, wherever they might be throughout South Florida, look, you know, we're open to suggestions. You know, law offices.
Sure.
Bail bondsman, you know, whatever is out there, we'll listen to serious inquiries if you're interested in sponsorship opportunities for the power forward belt. You know, so make, you know, give us a call, send us an email, and we'll definitely talk business with you.
All right. Spotlight time.
Spotlight time.
Spotlight time. So this has been a have you seen the movie Spotlight?
I did, yes.
Won an Oscar. Okay, so that movie has been more entertaining recently than, or was more entertaining than some of these recent Spotlight players, just because they have been losing so many games. But with that said, I thought we got a couple. I thought we had a good game from Dion Waiters, who is our first Spotlight player. He gets so much crap online. Like, he gets so much crap on Twitter. And I know, like, a lot of people, not everybody is on Twitter, right? Like, that is an echo chamber that is meant for people on Twitter, and only people on Twitter see what happens on Twitter. I get that. But holy crap, people. Like, I just little stat here, right? Williams, Derek Williams, Justice Winslow, and Josh Richardson, they combined for 27 shots. They took 27 shots combined. Deion Waiters took 26. Now, a lot of people would be like, oh, he's Kobe Bryant. He thinks he's Kobe Bryant. But when you watch the game, he's creating for himself. He's trying to create for others. He had 3 assists in the game, but he could have had more if other guys converted. Did he struggle around the rim a little bit? Yeah, he probably missed, off the top of my head, 3 or 4 easy layups that he probably should have made throughout that game.
Possibly, but,
He scored 16 points in the fourth quarter. Without him, the Heat get blown out. They have no chance. They never bring it within 7 or 8 or even 4 points. Like, that never happens without the Deion Waiters. And, you know, I think he has this stigma about him. There is a narrative that follows him, and people, he's an easy target. He is a scapegoat, and that's okay. Like, every team needs a scapegoat. Every team has it, whether you're a Heat fan or any other fan. You have a scapegoat on your team, but let's just try to be a little bit more realistic about Deion Waiters. That's all I'm trying to say. And that, I'll get off my soapbox now.
No need to get off of it, because, I mean, I saw the attacks and your defense of Deion during the game on Twitter. I tried not to get engaged myself, because I think there's no changing these perspectives.
Thanks for that, by the way. I was all on my own.
You're on... Isn't that the way it should be, though? I mean, if you're on Deion Waiters Island, you've got to go out there and prove your worth. I mean, that's not just for anybody, you know. You've got to show up out there.
It's a hard fight, man. It's a hard fight. I'm gritty. I can handle it.
Look, I mean, what are you going to say that we haven't said a million times? To be honest with you, I think we've made a strong case on our podcast as to, why he's not a bad player. There were a number of times there where maybe he shouldn't have taken those shots at the rim, but... To that point, I think if Whiteside had been a little bit more engaged in cleaning up some of those rebounds, we wouldn't be talking about those shots at the rim and those missed shots at the rim from Waiters. I think, you know, it could have made a huge difference in the overall flow of the game. And you're right. I mean, in the second half in particular, nobody else wanted to. I mean, look, everybody talks about the missed shots from Deion Waiters, but, I mean, Justice Winslow, who is everybody's favorite golden boy, shot 25% tonight, 3 of 12. And I know he made impact, you know, with his 5 assists, and he controlled the tempo, and he, you know, got the offense going, et cetera, et cetera. But 3 of 12 is not good. That's not acceptable by any stretch of the imagination. And you know, everybody wants to say, oh, well, he's still young, and he's going to be the future of the team. It's like, well, that's not necessarily a given. And you have to also look at the fact that Deion Waiters has been in the league now for his fifth season. He's starting his fifth season, but he's still very, very young. 24. He's still a young player. And he still has plenty of time to develop as well. And I mean, I don't know. How old is Josh Richardson? Isn't he similar in age, 22, 23?
I think I'll look it up before saying anything. He's 23.
I mean, yeah, so he's a year younger than Waiters. He shoots 4 of 9, and he gets a pass for a lot of missed shots. He had a couple of shots that he missed at the rim as well.
Because he's coming off of injury, and that's what everybody says. It's like, but this is a guy, when he played well in the last couple of games that he played, and he didn't show up tonight, you know? He didn't have a good game tonight, and he's in the starting lineup. Like, he's healthy now, and this team held him out longer than they needed to. Because it's the beginning of the season, so yeah, I don't think the injury thing. Is there rust because he didn't play in training camp, preseason? Sure, but I don't know how much rust there is to going 4 from 9 in the field, especially when you had just been playing well. So, yeah. Deion Waiters, really good defense there towards the end.
On Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, on Kawhi Leonard. Anytime that Winslow, for whatever reason, got switched off of Kawhi. Side note: I forgot to mention this on our recap when we talked about it, but Did you notice that Kawhi Leonard was guarding Justice Winslow for a lot of that game?
Yeah, I did.
That was weird, right? Like, why? You know, well, like, because Gordon Dragic
could be why he finished 3-12, I suppose. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was just an easier matchup for him. I'm trying to think.
Maybe there wasn't even a point in matching up the Spurs. If you're Greg Popovich, you look at this Heat team and like, we'll match up straight one for one straight up and just play our game and not worry about this because they're the Heat and they're not very good.
Well, Danny Green, who's also a pretty good defender, started tonight, which he did in the first game against Miami. And so he was hurt at that point, but he was back in tonight's lineup. He got hurt again at the start of the second half, but he's a pretty good defender. I guess he was able to stay with Richardson most of the time while he was in there. I guess it just seemed to make sense to keep it straight up, as you said.
But, yeah, I didn't mean to digress. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't seeing things.
Good point. That's a Waiters.
Deion Waiters, yeah. I mean, good. I thought he had a good game. I thought he's at this point, he's the Dark Knight. He's Batman. Right, he's not the hero you want, but he might be the hero you need sometimes, and that's not how that goes. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
I messed that up. You can correct it.
No, you're fine.
Oh, I got it. Okay. So, yeah, I thought like you know he's not the guy that people are gonna Heat fans want to root for. But at the end of the day, I'm not saying he's gonna win games. He didn't win this game for Miami. And I thought a lot of his points came in basically what was amounted to garbage time because San Antonio wasn't playing that hard in the fourth quarter. But I do think that, like, look, somebody's got to take this ball over. I thought Justice Winslow, we'll talk about Winslow a little bit more, but I thought Winslow was aggressive in the first half, got less aggressive when he basically had missed, you know, 9 of his 12 shots. At that point, he's sure. Like, maybe I should stop shooting the ball. And Deion Waiters was like, well, I got to do it. Nobody else is going to do it. You know, maybe there's an argument to be made that Tyler Johnson should have got the ball more. I can see that. I can understand that. But somebody had to take those shots. And Tyler Johnson was only 4-for-9 in the game. So it wasn't
a really good point because I think there were moments there where specifically Richardson, Winslow, and even I think to some extent Tyler Johnson had the ball and they were just holding it and holding and dribbling and pounding the ball, pounding the hell out of the ball and not doing anything with it.
Yeah.
And everything was getting stagnant. Whiteside wasn't diving to the rim. He seemed to get bottled up by either Aldridge or Gasol at alternate moments there. And nobody wanted to do anything. And so for all the criticism against Waiters, it's like you need somebody, you know, without Dragic there. And I think we would see a completely different offense if Dragic had been in the game.
I'm going to embarrass myself right now. Did you see Finding Dory?
I have not seen it yet.
Well, you should. It's swell. It is wonderful. So Finding Dory, I'm just going to – this might make sense to like 2% of our listeners.
Okay.
But in the movie, they say, what does Dory do? Why is Dory great? Why is she a great character? Why is she an awesome fish? Because she doesn't think. She just does. And Marvin or Merlin or – I don't know. The big
Marlin.
Clownfish. Yeah, Marlin. He Merlin's a wizard. Marlin is he thinks too much, and he's nervous, and he thinks too much, and then he doesn't do anything.
Good point.
Deion Waiters is Dory. He doesn't think, he just goes. And while Winslow is in his own head, and Richardson is fighting off that rust, and Tyler Johnson is, you know, whatever he's doing, you know, you're right. They're just like dribbling, just banging the ball, banging the ball against the floor, not doing anything. Deion Waiters is just, give me this thing. I'm just going to go at the rim and see what happens. And sometimes I'm going to miss a shot. And hey, sometimes I'm probably just going to scream and one every time and see what happens. Like, and I'm okay with that. Somebody needs to do it.
Yeah, there was one particular play, I think, where he was expressing some serious frustration there. And then they showed the replay, and it was Danny Green who had cut across his arm, or Jonathan Simmons, I can't remember, one or the other, who cut across his arm. And then he didn't get the foul call, and Waiters is arguing, saying, hey, look, he hit me. And then the replay clearly shows the fact that he got hit across the arm. And then, I mean, there's just... when he cradles the ball as he's diving towards the rim, you know, he's going to draw some contact. And unfortunately, he's just not getting a lot of those foul calls. I mean, for as aggressive as he was, he didn't shoot any free throws tonight. That should say something. I mean, he was 12 of 26. I know a lot of those were long jumpers, including 3 or 6 from three-point range, but did not get any foul call at all. And I think the and-one thing, as charming as you and I might think of it, I think some referees ultimately get a little annoyed and pissed off about it.
I agree 100% with that. I agree 100%. Yeah. I think there is I think refs don't like Deion Waiters. And I'm not blaming the refs. Like, he probably shouldn't scream and one into their ear every time he gets near the rim. But I agree with you. At some point, it's like, you know, you're crying wolf. But, all right, Justice Winslow, let's move on to him. You know that I like to do this. I did this in the first game, Winslow versus Kawhi. I thought, just for the record, Winslow played really, really good defense on Kawhi Leonard. I thought he really bothered him on a lot of shots. I think that the shots that Kawhi did take against Winslow, some of them went in, like I'll get to, but, well, I'll tell you, he made 3 out of 8. I have like 8 or 9 here. I can't really read my handwriting. But he made 3 out of 8 or 9 attempts Kawhi did against Winslow. But there were a number of times where Winslow just bothered the crap out of him and forced Kawhi to just get rid of the ball. So I just want to say that. But that was, I thought Winslow played a good game overall. Even though he didn't score, 3 of 12, only 7 points. But he had 5 assists. He ran the offense for a big portion of this game because Dragic wasn't there and they just gave him the ball to run the offense. I thought he did an okay job, you know, for a point forward. Did as well as you really can. What did you think about Justice Winslow?
There were some good things there. I think you're right. I was also a little disappointed to see him kind of hold the ball a little bit. You know, I felt like not till the end of the game did he realize he could push the pace considerably. Like, he was just walking it up slowly, and that seemed to slow things down and not play towards what Miami's strengths this season are. And that's unfortunate because you want him to get into the habit. And I don't know if it's just because he wants to be able to kind of take in the defense and then pick a point up to attack. Maybe that's what he's trying to do and trying to figure it all out and not necessarily go in there half-cocked and not necessarily have a game plan going. But that was something that I saw that was particularly disconcerting to me.
He's not used to running the point, though, so it is. This game in general, we did play right into the Spurs' hands. The game had a pace of 93.8.
Yeah.
Slow. That's exactly
what Miami doesn't play at a particularly high pace anyway. But
they don't. They don't. You're right.
That's slower than they normally play, which is saying something.
Yeah.
Overall, yeah, I mean, I guess if I had to rate his game, I would say it was probably a C. You know, yeah, positive impact, not necessarily a huge negative impact, but you would have liked some more aggression from him, and you would have liked to see some of those shots fall. And I don't think you can all just chalk it up to Kawhi's defense. I think there were just some moments there. He was wide open on a couple of those shots, and they just didn't fall. And that's on him.
Winslow got the better of Kawhi on a couple times where he just kind of, he at least got by him or, you know, the Heat ran some sort of motion to get Winslow loose enough for a shot. And you're right. Like, we can point to all the good things that Winslow does. And he does good things. He was a +9. He was the highest plus minus on the team. I think the only person that came close was Tyler Johnson. He was a +1.
Hmm. Luke Babbitt, +0.
Can't forget about Babbitt. Good, solid 8 minutes. Yeah, but at some point it's just like, all right, that shot needs to fall. Like, if it was 6 of 12, if it was 5 of 12, maybe it wouldn't have felt so impactful. But 3 of 12 is tough, and I understand why he stopped shooting late in the game. He's basically like, my shot's not going in, I'm done. And
yeah, he seemed to play better off ball. Like, you know, he was cutting down the lane. I think there was one time in particular where he just dove to the rim, and I want to say it was Waiters who found him cutting and dished to him, and he was able to finish it for a dunk.
Wasn't it in the last Spurs game that Winslow, like in the second half, it was almost the opposite of this game where he got really aggressive in the second half, and he started getting to the free throw line and stuff, and that to me was a big, I even wrote about it. Yeah, it was definitely the Spurs game because I wrote about it for All You Can Heat, and he started to figure out, like, all right, he ignored the three-point, I think he took like 3 three-pointers in the first half, I want to say off the top of my head. And for the rest of the game, he only took one more, and it was like at the end of a shot clock type situation. But he really just rejected the 3-point line, even though everybody's been saying all he has to do is figure out that 3-point shot. And he just started getting to the rim and got to the free throw line. And we haven't really seen that since that game, or in any of these losses really. And I would like to see Winslow basically just stop. I want to see him just get to the rim. He is so big. He has got such a good first step. He's so physical. Like, to me, he shouldn't be shooting threes. Like, he shouldn't be trying to make this Draymond Green, Kawhi Leonard leap from the perimeter. I think he should be maybe looking at a guy like DeMar DeRozan or an old teammate of his, Dwayne Wade, who basically just made a career on, like, look, the three-pointer's not going in. I'm not confident shooting it. let me do something I am confident in. I would love to see him get back to that and start getting to the free throw line. He only took two free throws in the game. So
yeah, the free throw disparity, I'm glad you brought that up, because Miami, I'm looking at it right now, they're 28th worst in the league. You know, they're only shooting just above 20 free throws per game. And that's, I mean, Philadelphia and Dallas are the only teams that are worse than they are. They only shot 21 free throws, and of those, Hassan shot 9 of them. So nobody else is getting to the line, and they're not even converting those at a high rate. I don't know what their free throw rank is as far as their overall percentage, but it's probably not very good.
All right. Want to move on to some just last-minute notes that we want to squeeze in here?
They're second to last. I mean, tomorrow night's opponent, Atlanta, is the worst free throw shooting team, and that's mostly because they have Dwight Howard, but Miami's not much better. Only shooting 68.5% from the free throw line. Horrific.
Yeah, that Hassan Whiteside versus Dwight Howard, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Paul Millsap versus whoever.
Derek Williams.
Yeah. Jesus. Okay. Just some other notes to wrap this thing up. The Heat did outscore the Spurs in the paint, 48-20, mostly because San Antonio shot like 53% from three-point range, got to the line 20 times, or made 20 of their 27 free throws, and they hit, I had it right here, 30 points, 30 mid-range points, and that was a lot of LaMarcus Aldridge. So that it looks like a positive on its face. Like, the Heat want to get paint points, but they also missed a ton of opportunities. They missed 14 shots in the paint, which is worth 28 points, which would have, you know, you get half of that, and this is a game, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And this is just a trend. I just wanted to make that note. They're the third worst team in finishing in the paint this season. 53.6% of their shots less than 5 feet of the rim. So, I mean, this is... And it's not good. You know, when you're a team that's apparently built around Hassan Whiteside, that's not good. Right?
No, it's not. And... you know, I don't know what else to say about tonight's game, to be honest with you. I kind of want to just put it in our rearview mirror. Look forward to our next game, you know, which, you know, Miami doesn't have a lot of time to recover from this. So maybe they can be a lot more like Dory and Dion both and just kind of, you know, move forward in action and rather than getting hung up on things and thinking too much, because they don't have a lot of time to think about it. They hop on a plane tonight after San Antonio, fly back down to Miami. And then they host the Atlanta Hawks, who are 7-2, and that tips off at 7:30. So that should be an interesting game there. You know, obviously, they're
probably not. And then can we the next expect, game is, think, let's look forward a little bit. I mean, the next game is against Milwaukee. What are they right now? They're something.
They're struggling.
They are. Thanks, ESPN, for screwing up your whole thing.
Milwaukee is 5-4 right now.
So that's a winning record. That's something the Heat can't say they have, and they've won. They just beat the Grizzlies on Saturday, and they have all that day's rest until... Actually, no, we get them on the second night of a back-to-back, because they play Atlanta the night after we play Atlanta. So we're going to get them on the second night of a back-to-back at home, so maybe they'll win that. I guess that's probably Miami's next real opportunity to win a game. And then they go to Washington at Washington, and the Wizards are a dumpster fire too. So, and then after that, maybe, at Philadelphia. So there's a chance that we can get a 3-game win streak there.
No, that's an interesting one. The Joel Embiid versus Hassan Whiteside matchup. Christ. That's a lot to look forward to.
just put the two of them on the floor together and just let them shoot as much as they want.
I'm all for that. I think that's a good opportunity there.
That said, Whiteside, I mean... Before we sign this thing off, the shoulda passes and the passes actual that I keep track of.
Yes.
Shoulda passed 0 times compared to, well, like shoulda passed where he didn't, 0 times.
Right.
2 times where he actually did pass. Both of those times out of the post. So I will just say, hey, look, on the last podcast we did, yesterday's pod, I said not once this season had he passed out of the post. And I wasn't exaggerating. Like, I keep track of this, man. Like, not once, and he did it twice in this game. So that was something. And he didn't take any. Why are you shooting that shots? Which I call waste. Why are you shooting that? Waste shots. So no waste shots, which is great. None of those dumb 18, 20 footers that he just gets the ball because he's supposed to keep moving it. And he's like, I'll just throw this up in the, near the rim area.
Right. None of those. No, you're right. You're right. To me, that wasn't the overall concern. There were just those moments there where he lacks engagement.
Well, he's going to stop jumping on everything. I mean, there was a play where Kawhi Leonard just got the ball into the rim, like caught a pass, and he jumped. Like, he didn't do anything with the ball. He just jumped. And luckily, he passed the ball out anyway, or he missed a shot or something. Right. But no, he passed the ball out. And I'm like, why are you jumping? Like, you're a foot taller than this guy. Or half a foot taller than this guy. Just put your arms up and just stay.
Nine foot standing reach, right?
I mean, there's no reason to jump, man. It's insane. Don't jump. Don't leave your feet for everything. If somebody just says jump, he'll jump. Like, it's in the scouting report now. If you're near him, he will jump and try to block it. Now, that's starting to frustrate me.
It is.
Let's find it. Can we just say one positive out of here? Because I tried to end on a positive and then I didn't. What would Dory do? That's my positive.
Dory do? Not think about it too much, I guess, and just move on to the next game. So.
Exactly. All right. Well, after 40 minutes, we could stop thinking about it so much and just move on to the next game. And we'll be back with another recap. Maybe a win. Probably not. All right. Well, that's all we got for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, Audioboom, TuneIn, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter, @LockedOnHeat, or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, respond. And we have a great mailbag question for next Monday. It's a doozy. So just keep sending those mailbag questions in. LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you aren't subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day for this kind of expert recap from David and I, and then other Mailbag Monday podcasts every Monday. Sometimes it's a Transition Tuesday if we're doing a recap. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us on iTunes so it helps our positions in the charts, helps other people discover the show. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.